Welcome to Ride On, episode 25. I'm James Gross, and I'm joined by my co-host, Julia Thane. Julia, we were off last week. We were in person the week before. What's new on your end?
Well, James, I would just like to say you were off last week. I was busy working. I was doing different micromobility things. I was doing my day job. I was doing my afternoon, evening, side hustles, everything. But yes, James, you're back from vacation, and so the show is back on. What's been happening over the past week? Well, one of the things, James, that's been going on in my world, which has been really interesting, is I've been meeting with a bunch of climate tech investors to talk about how climate tech investment has changed over the past year. And maybe just a couple of highlights for this audience, because I think it's really relevant. So first of all, climate tech umbrella term, transportation, energy, hard to abate sectors, all of that goes under this term. What I'm hearing from folks in the investment world is that VC and climate tech overall is down compared to last year and down again compared to the year before that. Transportation and energy, they're sort of falling out of favor as the terms du jour or the sectors du jour of what VC is investing in. And what's coming to the forefront is things like the hard to abate sectors. So cement, steel, hydrogen, of course. And I just thought that was really great, you know, sort of behind the scenes intel. It's something that you and I have been talking about, actually, is like, what are the trends in investment? And certainly that the viewers of this podcast and YouTube channel have been understanding from us as they've seen the data. We've shown them the data about what's happening in the investment landscape. So James, that's what I've been up to.
Okay, that's good. That's a nice way to start. So as we say, once the VC money goes away, that's when you can actually build real products and make real money. So great news for everyone in transportation. It's time to get that. The hype is out and the real work begins. Okay, so a couple of announcements before we start. The first is we are giving away Electric XB 3.0. Electric continues to be so generous. Not quite as generous as they are with Mr. Beast in that giveaway program that they have with Mr. Beast, but I think we are in second with Electric in our giveaways. So you can go to ridereview.com to enter our giveaway to win. And of course, we'd really appreciate if you subscribe and leave comments on this channel for a little extra boost. You might notice that a lot of our giveaway winners are also people that leave comments on our channel. So we try to favor some of that as much as we can. As well, my other announcement, Julia, was about MicroMobility America and our first ever Ride Expo that we have coming up on October 19th and 20th. That will be in the San Francisco Bay Area. And again, for anyone, if you're not interested in coming for more of the business-to-business conversations that happen in a more traditional MicroMobility America or Europe type event, we also just have a day committed to people that want to ride all the amazing vehicles, whether it's electric bikes, electric motorcycles, neighborhood electric vehicles, like we'll have on our show today later. And so, yeah, check it out. You can go to micromobility.io or ridereview.com to register for MicroMobility America or for the Ride Expo. So that's it on the announcement side. Julia, we have 2 weeks of news, which we won't all get to, but I would love to just start to jump in and hear from you on what's the latest on what's going on.
Yeah, James, 2 weeks of news is too much to cover. So we're going to do the highlights this week. And I'm going to try to speak as fast as possible so I can fit as much news in. But actually, you know, kidding aside, the first topic that we have today is around shared micromobility. So just as I mentioned, that VC money is starting to go down in the transportation and energy space. Some of the transportation deals that happened in the past were in the shared micromobility space, and investors are feeling a little bit burned. Now that the VC investment is the wave of VC investment in shared micromobility seems to be somewhat over, we're starting to see consolidation happen. So I actually had to do a double take on this story, James, because I was like, wait, are these the same two companies that we were talking about last time? Or is this a different pair? Because what's been happening is there's a rumor has it, it's been reported on, that two of Europe's largest electric scooter and bike operators, so Tier and Voi, are exploring the possibility of a merger. And the reason I had to do a double take is because a little while back, maybe a month ago, I had reported on a possible merger between Tier and Bolt. So Voi is a Swedish company, Bolt is an Estonian company, but now we're actually seeing a possible merger between Tier and Swedish scooter giant Voi. So James, what do you think is happening? Is this the only conversation we're going to hear, or do you think next week's news is going to be about Tier and Lime and talks about a possible merger?
Yeah, it seems like people are up for sale and trying to figure things out. I commend them for trying to do deal making. I think to your point, the way you started this show, Julia, and I think an analogy we've used before, there's not more money coming. So all of these companies that are on the field need to figure out how to survive at this point. So this is a very, very natural thing that you'd see happen, which is, hey, my P&L can't support surviving without additional capital or without more efficiencies. Another company says, you know, my P&L can't support that as well. And it makes sense that they're going to come together and consolidate. I think it's probably fine. Clearly, when you have less competition, the consumer can often lose in these situations. Where I have hope for this is there's probably too many players. And so that's okay. And then I also think this is a very big check to city governments, which again, I think was a part of this story, has been a part of a lot of stories where city governments have just simply come down way too hard on these companies. And I think they're starting to see that basically these companies are going to go out of business if they don't sort of take the death grip off of them. And, you know, either go out of business or you merge. So that seems to be happening. And so hopefully people will notice that. And, we'll see different regulations and we'll see a better stance coming from city governments.
Yeah, it's interesting because I would say there's a tale of two continents here in terms of city government and city regulations. Whereas in the U.S., I think with shared mobility or micromobility in the beginning, cities were very tough on regulations. They stopped scooter operations or stopped bike operations at first, and then they became a little bit more lax. They standardized on some of the contracts with scooter and bike operators. They had some data sharing agreements in place, but you still haven't seen shared micromobility come back in the U.S. in the same way it was pre-pandemic. I think Europe, it was the opposite. I remember when Paris first came out with regulations around scooter operations, it was a list of 10 principles that the scooter operators had to adhere to. And now you see, you know, the referendum in Paris where folks are saying that they are, you know, the 5% of people who showed up or the 10 people who showed up to vote are saying that they don't want scooter operations there. So Europe now, which had a much larger micromobility fleet from a shared perspective, is now downsizing some of its fleets. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. My guess, I don't know, if I were to bet, I think we're going to see consolidation not just in Europe and in US of the largest electric scooter and bike operators, but actually across Europe and the US to have a few who just operate in both markets. And then who knows, maybe it's Asia next, where some of the consolidation is happening. But this is definitely a good space to watch and a space to watch where the hypothesis would be that we're going to see a handful of winners, maybe, you know, let's say 3 to 5 across the US and Europe. And maybe 5 to 10 across US, Europe, and Asia. What is that? Does that sound right to you, Jakes?
Yeah, probably.
Are we making bets? Yeah.
I think the big thing is just like, you know, what's probably most important to our audience is like this market is still growing really rapidly. I think I know your research showed that from Augustine Friedel, who put out the latest chart on this. Like this market is still growing a lot. Again, the free money is gone in the market to like maybe subsidize some of the rides or deal with like, you know, put a bunch of that money against trying to. You know, move regulators around, but the ridership is way up. And so I talked to friends coming back from Europe or going to cities and saying how they're continuing to ride. And so, you know, it's really good to see. Ultimately, that's what matters. All this other stuff just kind of has to, I think, shake out.
Yeah. Well, speaking of deals, James, just talking about the private micromobility space for a second, there is a potential interesting e-bike deal on the table. VanMoof is now accepting suitors. So Trek, Giant, KKR are three of the companies that articles are reporting have been courting VanMoof, although I don't know if courting VanMoof is the right way to say it, but have been talking to VanMoof about potential acquisitions. What I found interesting about this story is that, you know, Trek, Giant, KKR, it's not like Cowboy is trying to acquire VanMoof. It's some of these bigger name brand, more well known for acoustic bikes brands that are going after VanMoof. So what that says to me is the acoustic bike brands know that they have been behind on the e-bike trend overall. They're looking for some of these maybe underpriced assets to purchase so that they can do what they do best, which is, you know, sort of quality bikes with maybe more commodity type parts, but not only in the acoustic bike space, also in the e-bike space. So James, thoughts on Trek, Giant, KKR getting into the e-bike space via acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, they're already in it. You know, they all make but they all make their acoustic bikes electric. I just, you know, I don't think it's very interesting. I don't think it's, you know, it's a bankruptcy thing. Someone's got to buy it. The true story is VanMoof was a very ambitious company trying to do a lot of things very differently. They have failed. Now they might go to an acoustic company that's not ambitious, that's not interesting, that's mostly run by bikers, to make bikes that are sort of electric. So,
James is bored.
The VanMoof conversation, can we just stop talking about it? But yeah,
no, we can't. It's a big story. People care about it.
So
I mean,
yeah,
gets clicks, which is like partly what this is about. But at the same time, I think it is an important trend. It's something to consider. And it was the highest capitalized private, you know, micromobility option. So I don't think you can ignore that. I mean, it definitely sends some sort of message throughout the industry. And I think it is important what happens to it. I mean, it's like a breakup. You know, you have to think about pre, during, and post. What happens with a breakup? And I think with VanMoof, we're still seeing like a post-breakup story. And so again, how it ends is almost as important as how it started. And that's why I think we got to keep covering it.
Okay.
James is on board. So James, final topic before I turn it over to you for launches is a sad one. And I want to acknowledge that, you know, over the past few weeks, there's been several high-profile deaths of teens killed by cars and killed while cycling. And James, you should talk a little bit about your interview with Micah Toll about this topic, but there's been two very different types of journalism coverage on these micromobility deaths. One is from the New York Times, who in the space of a week put out four articles that basically victim-blamed folks who were on e-bikes, and also talked about the dangers of e-bikes and the safety risks of e-bikes. And the second was a really beautiful written Washington Post article about a professional cyclist, a 17-year-old who died on the road in Boulder, and who was kind of an icon of cycling for the Colorado community, but really more worldwide. This article was much more about celebrating the life of the cyclist, much more about talking about how we would want people to still ride, and much more about talking about how, you know, safety needs to come from the design of the road rather than from expecting folks to behave a certain way on e-bikes. So, James, why don't you share a little bit about what your interview with Micah was about, and then I can talk about another news story where somebody is actually doing something about this rather than just reporting on it really poorly, like the New York Times.
Yeah, so Micah Toll, you know, probably the most important reviewer in the micromobility space from Electric, wrote a great piece rebutting the New York Times articles, as Julie mentioned. So Mike and I just really broke down his article. And then specifically, unfortunately, a couple of the articles centered around Encinitas, where I live here in Southern California. And specifically, part of what I was able to talk to Mike about, because I have the data and I can look at the data, you know, on some of the most violent areas of our city, and how we know where there's really bad things happening, and how we know there's ways to actually, slow cars down and actually enforce better things like speeding and red light running. It's just not happening. And so, it was great. And Micah, of course, is in Tel Aviv, where they have traffic cameras, speed cameras, but they don't have quite the incidents of death rates that we have here in the U.S. So it was a nice juxtaposition on this idea that we're debating things here in the United States that they don't even debate. And we are dealing with this that they're not dealing with quite at the same scale. So that was really nice. And, you know, shout out to Micah and, you know, the link to the video. But yeah, I think it's a real shame what's happening with the New York Times, and we'll continue to call them out. And it's not just us. I think a lot of people are calling them out. So that's good. And I'm glad they're reporting, but I think there is, well, just one other anecdote here locally, what I'm hearing is like people are really getting concerned about their kids riding e-bikes and riding to school and riding, and, you know, they just say it's not worth it. And I think, oh my gosh, this is so, one, it's just terrible that there was a tragedy. And then out of the tragedy, the idea that people are like, let's just all get SUVs and everything's going to be fine. It's like, no, the cars are still going to kill 43,000 Americans a year. Like, you can't just get out of the bike and go out of the SUV. Like, we're still going to die. And so, that's a really tragic thing. And then, you know, Julia, before you tell the incident in Colorado with the cyclist, like, so sad. And I was so taken aback by watching a YouTube video, actually, 2 weeks ago, it was Lance Armstrong is kind of coming back and people are interviewing a lot again. You know, Lance Armstrong was one of the most famous cyclists ever. He was probably the most famous American cyclist. And then, of course, he was shrouded in controversy. But no matter what, he's still, you know, he's still like a Ironman athlete, triathlete, things like that. And he just made this comment in this interview that I thought was so interesting, where he said, you know, where you ride nowadays? He says, oh, you know, ride mostly in the mountains. Oh, you're not riding the roads? No, the roads are too dangerous. And then the interview just went on. And I just thought, wow, here's Lance Armstrong, who, of course, you know the story of Lance Armstrong. He grew up riding his bike everywhere, right? Like most kids do. And he just makes the comment that I don't ride on the road anymore because it's too dangerous. And then the interview just goes on as if that's like a completely appropriate response. And like, we shouldn't be talking about that. Like, how is anyone to be a cyclist anymore? What are we going to do? We're just going to sit in our homes. And, you know, and so I think this normalcy is just is getting to a point where I, we have to do more to try to change that narrative. So yeah, back to you, Julia.
Yeah. No, I mean, not only that, but it's leading to some really policy-making decisions. I mean, speaking about policy-making decisions, again, pointing to Encinitas, I forget what it was, a state congressional member or something like that, who had wanted to put forward a rule around getting kids to basically have e-bike licenses. I mean, this is really stupid. And I'm sorry to use like so many expletives, and I'm sure our video editor is going to have to, you know, bleep out all of these things. Maybe not on YouTube. Maybe you don't have to do that on YouTube. In any case, I just think it's really stupid that we're victim blaming. We're trying to make these policy decisions where it's making getting on e-bikes harder, not easier. And especially for kids who get so much freedom around being on e-bikes. You know, I think there's definitely a case to be made for safety and there's a reason to do that. But making things harder and harder to do and not addressing the actual problem because it's like politically infeasible to do so is just fucking cowardly. So I think we really have to talk about that. And for that matter, like New York Times, fine that they're doing reporting. I actually would rather them not report at all if they're going to report this shit. So again, apologies for so many expletives this morning. Clearly, this is something that I feel very strongly about. But what I also feel very strongly about is how good of a Boston Mayor Michelle Wu is. She was originally became sort of famous in the transportation world because she wanted to make public transit free, and in fact has done that for a few bus lines in Boston. Now, as part of her effort to make Boston one of the top U.S. cities for raising children, she is providing free bike lessons for children between the ages of 4 and 13, and calling cycling a crucial life skill. They're starting the program out with 300 students with 15 different locations. I'm a little curious about how much this costs, but more than that, I just think that this is fantastic. So James, what do you think? Is this going to be a replicated policy? Is this something that others should do? How, you know, does this measure up to e-bike incentives and other policies that really spur the industry?
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. And I've given my own city a lot of flack for some of the decisions made, but you know, I saw my mayor the other day riding his e-bike. Like, he rides a lot and he's about it, but he is losing the narrative in the general population to these stories and to this idea that it's all just dangerous, everyone getting their SUV. And so, you know, seeing her leadership is awesome, and I'm super happy she's out there doing.
Great. James, want to get us into the launches?
Yeah, let's do it. So a couple of launches before we have our guest on. I mentioned it just a bit ago, but Kawasaki really is turning some heads, where they've announced now their first two electric motorcycles, the Ninja E1 and then the CE1. What's probably most important about this is, one, Kawasaki, I think everyone kind of, you know, knows Kawasaki, but as well, it's the first Japanese manufacturer to go all in on electric in the motorcycle space. And, you know, the Japanese are known, of course, for making amazing vehicles. So it's really great to see the commitment there, and hopefully we'll see other, of course, Japanese manufacturers of motorcycles going electric. The next one is the new WOW. I never know how to exactly say them, but WOW, WAU, they actually have been at the micromobility events before in the past. They'll be at America coming up here. They've got a really cool Cyber. Now, what's cool about the Cyber, it's kind of the competitor to the Suron, which the Suron, you know, we've written a guide about the Suron on Ride Review. Like, the Suron is exploding around the world in popularity. And it's also a couple of articles about the legality of a Suron and exactly where it sits. And how fast it can go, and so I think there's warranted concerns about Suron and it's and what it could do. But here comes another manufacturer trying to build something similar to the Suron, and this tops out at 55 miles per hour. So it's effectively, you know, a motorcycle as well. But yeah, cool that they're doing it, and you know, their crowdfunding campaign is up now. And then two others before we get our guests out here, Julia. One is Aventon. We all know Aventon, I've had them on the show. They're out with their Solterra 2. I think what's great about the Solterra 2 is it's a wonderful introductory bike for people that have never ridden before and want something very similar to an acoustic bike. And so I think Aventon does this really well with the Solterra, where it's you know, kind of the classic features. It's very lightweight. It's very simple to use. And I think we'll see more of this at a price point. Of course, that can bring a lot of people into the e-bike space. And then finally, and Julia, this one was really for you, the Lempago, which is a new electric trike design is out. This three-wheeler has two seats and can go about 45 miles of range and has a top speed of 28 miles per hour. So it's a low-speed or LSV vehicle, kind of almost looks a little bit neighbor electric vehicle like we'll have on later with our guests. But yeah, I don't know if you've seen the Lempago, Julia, but I think it's your vibe. I think you'd like it. I could see you around SoCal with it.
Okay, as long as you that's because it has over, two seats.
Yeah, it's got, you know, like I feel like, yeah, you don't want to ride alone. You want to ride alone. And I knew you liked me in that Bugatti, so I feel like this is the baby Bugatti. So this is the
Barbie. Yeah, yeah. This is the Barbie mobile. Amazing. I'm a little more Oppenheimer than I am Barbie, James. I just want, despite appearances, yeah.
I think it could be Oppenheimer-ish. I don't know. You know,
amazing.
Yeah, it's cool. Nice. Cool vehicle.
Cool. All right.
Great.
Lempago.
Well, Julia, that's it for me on the launches, although we have a couple more launches coming up, but we have a guest on to tell us about that. So I will invite Keith Simon up to the stage now. And Julia, I'll let you take over to do an introduction to Keith.
Amazing. Keith, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Ben, yeah. Keith, where are you joining us from?
Interestingly enough, I am in central Missouri. You heard of Lake of the Ozarks?
We certainly have, and we watched the show.
There you go. So my family has a place here on the lake, and it's the final countdown before school starts for my kids. So we've been trying to balance work and life here this last week and get some time on the water and have some fun as a family.
Amazing. Well, Keith, thank you for joining us from the Ozarks and also from what is potentially vacation. I just want to introduce you for the audience. So Keith Simon is the president and chief executive officer for Wave Inc., which is an electric mobility provider that was spun out of Polaris in 2021. They are responsible for the manufacturing, the distribution, the marketing, and all the supporting of the Gem and Taylor Dunn brands. So Keith, I wanted to start out with a bit of a personal question, actually. And that personal question is around how you got into this space. How did you get into the low-speed vehicle space? And I don't mean this from like a professional perspective, but really what's the personal reason that you got into this space?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, the worlds of personal and professional often collide and, you know, you find yourself in situations that come from your professional path, right? And so, you know, naturally being part of a company like Polaris focused on vehicles and mobility, I put myself into that space. I've always had a passion for, I'm an engineer by degree, so always had a passion for, you know, small vehicles, motorcycles, ATVs, these kind of products, and that helped me find my way to Polaris. And then what was unique about this opportunity is within the world of Polaris, getting a chance to work in this different business unit that was focused on electric mobility for more commercial and business-to-business applications, which is where it got its roots. And as you get deep into that, you find a passion. I found a passion for what has become, you know, Wave to today, which is, you know, largely low-speed electric vehicles for both commercial and consumer applications. And it's not hard to get excited about this space with everything happening in the macro world around us with electric vehicles and transformation in mobility, shared mobility, all the things you guys are obviously way smarter on than I am globally. But it's become a passion, you know, and you know, besides the fun part of leading a team of people in general, that's a passion of mine. But being in a space that has so much momentum and so much potential and a business that fits well into that is it breeds every day as we get deeper into this.
That's awesome, Keith. And we hear that often from CEOs and from founders. is that the personal and professional blend together, and just the excitement around this space, the transformation of it, the innovation of it is really a huge driver in terms of the work that you do. Kate, you have had a pretty exciting set of weeks. I know it was maybe last week or the week before where GEM revealed their new line of low-speed electric vehicles, and there were four different models. Can you tell us about what those vehicles are, and then also what the idea was behind these vehicle launches?
Yeah, so we launched the model year 24 GEM recently here, and it's the culmination of a lot of exciting work and innovation from our team and research and development to bring to market what is a disruptive version of low-speed vehicles. And I think if you saw the press releases and some of the write-ups on it, it's really exciting. You know, we set out to, in a balanced way, drive the best low-speed electric vehicle to market for both our commercial and our consumer customer bases. And so if you think about where this is going, you know, we're very uniquely positioned as an LSV between, you know, on the low speed side, you know, bikes and scooters and in some cases golf carts, and then on the high speed side, your typical over the road vehicle, and we really fit right in between, you know, purpose built street legal low speed electric vehicles, and so as we evolve the product and have to keep in mind the balance between those commercial and consumer customers, it becomes a lot about the performance of the vehicle as much as the look and feel of the vehicle. And so it's been an interesting new evolution for us to do that. And you know, we, through a more advanced electrical architecture, brought 30 plus new features to the vehicle that are more like a traditional EV. Like if you were to get in and drive a Tesla or, you know, the Ford Mach electric product, you know, you've got single pedal driving, you've got really good hill control, regenerative braking, you know, that goes into that single pedal driving. So some really awesome new features that make this vehicle feel more like a traditional EV, over the road EV. The charging and battery technology that we're bringing to the vehicle is awesome. Our vehicles have onboard charging, so you don't need to invest in any new charging system for your house. We've also brought new lithium ion technology to this vehicle that gives us the right blend of capacity for the different use cases. And then what's even more cool is now all of our GEMs, no matter which battery configuration you select, will plug in and charge at public charging. So if you're using it in your local urban area, you go down the street to the grocery store or to the banks and schools where you're seeing more and more of these electric vehicle charging stations installed and in use, you can now plug your GEM into that no matter which battery solution you have. So that was a really awesome advancement in this vehicle. Again, making it more like the EVs. And then finally, you know, some new colors and things to spice it up as well for the consumer. Really brought this whole together.
Yeah, awesome. Well, congratulations on that, Keith. And let me ask maybe one more question about the vehicles themselves, and then I'll turn it over to James to tease the launch of something that you all are doing. I think it's this week or next. But Keith, first of all, I would just say as a comment, it's really fascinating to me that with the GEM vehicles, you're able to appeal to both a consumer and a, you know, business, a commercial base with the same vehicle. I think what we've been finding in general in micromobility is it's sort of an either or, like brands are either trying to go for more of a privately owned micromobility space, or they're trying to go for a shared micromobility space. So very, very cool that you're able to do that with just a single vehicle. I'm just curious, what's your general split of sales? Like, you know, how does it split between commercial and consumer?
Yeah, good question. Historically, these businesses were built on that commercial space. So you think about college and university campuses, cities and municipalities, government bases, resorts, and those types of operations where it's fit very well. So it's still the majority of the business, and we're still very excited about the foundation of the business being built on that, because those segments are going to continue to grow with broader understanding of low-speed electric vehicles and electrification in general. So that continues to be the majority of our business, and our channel was set up around that type of customer, where you think about outbound sales, outbound service, the vehicles being used as a tool, if you will, such that you need that touch from a distribution partner or a dealer. And so the minority of the business is still the consumer side, but we've launched in 2021 our efforts to grow that space, and it's been nearly doubling every year. So I expect within the next few years, it's going to be a very much balanced 50-50 type business.
Amazing. And hey, Keith, James here. You also have some other things coming up that we want to talk about. So we've heard about the Gem Go, which is your mapping tool that you're releasing for basically a low-speed mapping tool, which I just absolutely love as someone that, you know, is always trying to find the safest routes, the slowest routes for both myself, my family, you know, my kids. So can you tell us more about Gem Go?
Yeah, no, it's exciting. So you can put yourself in my shoes as a leader of a business where we're in a period where our focus is growth. And that's what makes these businesses exciting is growth. And the most significant opportunity for Gem is, besides having product and channel in place to support that growth, is driving awareness and education around this vehicle type, because it's largely misunderstood, right? You think about the space, people think about it as a golf cart. We get called that all the time. We don't drive on golf courses. We're not meant for golf, right? You know, they think about it as a, you know, kind of a toy that might work in I get this a lot, retirement communities. Oh, you guys must sell a lot in retirement communities. We love that space. And it's a very interesting, you know, subsegment of the total opportunity. But when you start talking to people more broadly about the use case of the Gem vehicle, and you say low speed electric vehicles, federally regulated, street legal on roads that are speed limited 35 miles an hour or less, sometimes you get that look like, oh, 35 miles an hour. Well, that's not interesting to me. What can I do? Drive to the mailbox and back. And so the development of Gem Go was an opportunity for us to, you know, show people in a format that we're all very used to, whether you use Apple Maps or Google Maps or some other, you know, mapping application, to show people this is what you can do with this vehicle in your urban or suburban setting. And I'll be the first to admit that Gem's not for everyone. You wouldn't have a Gem here in central Missouri and, you know, the lake area, you know, to do all your day-to-day driving, because everything's just so vast and spread out. Now, maybe some pockets of communities might, but the more than 50% of the roads in the country are 35 miles an hour or less. And you can imagine that density goes up as you get into those urban and suburban areas. So being able to pull up this app and show you, James or Julia, that, hey, put in your address right here and I can show you, you can get to your schools, your banks, your stores, your friend's house, the parks, wherever it is you go in your community, the light bulb goes off for folks that I really could use this every day. And that's the message that we're coming with here as we look to educate and drive awareness, is the Gem is a very viable supplement to, or in some cases alternative to, a traditional automobile in your day-to-day life. And that really positions us different than that more legacy talk track of, oh, it's a cart for a beach community or a cart for a retirement community, or it's really fun. It's still going to always be that, but it can be that plus so much more. And that's what we're up against here. What myself and our team so passionate about as we, you know, transition this business into this phase of growth.
Yeah. So a couple of things you said there, but first highlighting the idea that over half of U.S. roads are less than 35 miles per hour, which again, if you can extrapolate that out to the rest of the world, it's probably even higher than half. So that's great for people to understand and know, is most of this area is for low speed electric vehicles. The second thing I'd ask is, so I love the map, was able to look at it and your team showed it to me. You know, my thought was immediately went to, gosh, I would love this option in Apple Maps or, you know, Android Maps, where there's 3 billion people are using those products. How far are we away from those products, do you believe, where, you know, you can, just like I can click on the walking route or the car route, I can click on the low speed vehicle route?
Yeah, that's the ultimate vision, James. And I've used that same example, you know, why not have it walk, bike, car, LSV, and we'll continue to work towards that. The phases that we've been working Gem Go in have led us to where we are right now, which is the product that you've seen, which is more of a dynamic view of everywhere you could go. And the next phase will be, how do we make it a destination-based A to B routing tool, which you can do from the way that it is today, but it takes a little bit more thinking and planning or on-the-go viewing in your particular area. And so it's the evolution of where this is going. And I think the team's done a nice job getting it to this point. And I expect you'll see what you're talking about in the not too distant future as we continue the investment on this Gem Go platform.
Yeah, well, I know it, you know, at our event coming up in America in October, we'll have both Apple and Google Maps people there. You know, we were lucky enough in Europe to have actually a pretty cool announcement from some of the LSV companies in Europe, where they did an alliance. They announced an alliance on stage, Microlino and a couple other players. I would love to see, of course, Gem pioneer this idea with Apple and Google, and maybe you know, I'd love to help pressure them to do something like that, because the data is clearly there, and I know a lot of people would love an option like that if it was made available to them. Keith, my last thing I wanted to say, you know, I was able to visit your manufacturing plant in Anaheim, California, with Oliver Bruce back in January of this year, and it was really cool to meet some of your team and have them show us around. And, you know, and actually just to see an American manufacturing company manufacturing actually onshore. What's the future there, do you see? I mean, in many ways, it seems like you're really ahead. We're seeing a lot of people, the pressure to reshore, the pressure to do more of the battery technology here in America. Do you see yourselves investing more in California as it relates to manufacturing? Clearly, it seems like a lot of the federal money going into manufacturing batteries is happening like in the Southeast. But yeah, just curious what your plans might be on the manufacturing front.
Yeah, so we've got, as you saw, a great foundation with some deep roots in California, and we like that for a lot of reasons. Tactically speaking, we still have a significant amount of capacity and optimization opportunity there to fully leverage what we have. And you can understand as a business person that that's important to us. But there are definitely ambitions to, you know, balance our, you know, national footprint as well as our global footprint as we continue to grow, James. And so eventually you'll run out of capacity in California, and as we grow, we'll be growing in strategic areas again across the country and the world. And we're really designing our manufacturing and supply chain to enable that in a very efficient way. And so excited to have some talented operations leaders on our team, a new COO, Alfredo Arroyo, who we brought in, who came from Google, actually. He joined us in January. You might have met him when you were at the factory. He was probably on, you know, week two at that point in time. But he brings some real alternative perspectives and forward-thinking perspectives to how we're setting this business up now, so that when we do grow beyond what we have today, it's very efficient and rapid, even at a global level.
Great. Well, Keith, just to wrap up here, I mean, again, awesome. You're making vehicles in America. You know, you've now released all your new GEM lineup for 2024, which looks, again, amazing. As Julia was mentioning, the Go product we'll all check out and use, and again, hopefully see that embedded in the MAP products in no time here. So yeah, thank you so much for the time, and look forward to seeing you in October.
Yeah, great. I appreciate you guys inviting me, and I think you guys are doing some really awesome stuff here. So thanks for involving us on that.
Great. Have a great day, Keith.
Keith, great to see you.
Thanks, Julia. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, Julia. Absolutely. There's Keith. So yeah, we didn't even get to talk about Taylor Dunn, which I'm like, you know, that's like the Austin
Conversations
Powers.
Conversations are always too short. I know.
The Austin Powers mobile, you know, where he's trying to back up and forth. And, you know, I feel like everyone's seen like the Taylor Dunn vehicles that are out there. But yeah, that's for maybe the Taylor Dunn's for a Micromobility America stage conversation around like B2B LSVs or something. Or more of the commercial side as you guys got into a little bit there. But yeah, great. Anything else?
I think we're all good. Sign up for Micromobility America, folks. Sign up for our e-bike giveaway for this week, and make sure you drop comments. It does indeed help. And we'll see you all next week.
See you next week. Right on.
Right on. Bye.